This is the Financial Sense News Hour. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team.
Welcome, everyone, to our coronavirus special report. Today, we're going to discuss retirement in the context of the new post-COVID world that we have entered, especially when we look at the macroeconomic environment and the fact that we are now back at 0% interest rates and quantitative easing as far as the eye can see. How does this change retirement?
Chris, why don't we begin with the three major expenses that most retired people faced? One is going to be housing. Second is going to be medical cost. As many studies have shown, most retirees, the inflation rate for retirees is probably higher than the general public, and that is mainly due to medical expenses. And then, of course, taxes. Taxes don't go away when you retire. You're still going to pay taxes on Social Security, depending on how much you get. You're still going to be paying taxes on income from interest, dividends, or even part-time work, which has become more the trend with boomers in retirement. So that was a trend that was already in place prior to COVID. I think you'll see more retirees working part-time after COVID in order to make ends meet, because expenses will be going up, but sources of income are going down. So that is something that is going to accelerate these three major factors. And we'll get into some of the detail of why this is going to change in a post-COVID world.
Now, Jim, as I said in the open, we're looking at a pretty different macroeconomic environment now, and this is likely to be with us for years to come. Unemployment levels are at depressionary like levels that we haven't seen for many, many decades now at this point. But there's a number of other forces that retirees are facing for the long haul. So what is this environment that you see setting up really for the 2020s?
You know, Chris, in the 2020s, some have likened it back to the 1960s. It's going to be a stagflationary environment. Lower rates of economic growth, which we've certainly seen in the last decade. I think the average economic growth rate in the last decade was a little under 2% compared to 3% economic growth in the previous decades, and 4 and 5% economic growth in the 50s and 60s. So stagflation is probably going to come back. And let's talk about something we're seeing on the evening news, social unrest. Anybody can remember, for example, in the 60s, the Black Panthers, the Weathermen. So you had domestic terrorist groups. You had more social unrest. People can probably remember the protest during the Vietnam War period. They can remember the shooting of students at Kent State. So a lot of this social unrest. And by the way, recently on FS Insider, you interviewed George Friedman along with Peter Zion. Both have written books about a lot of turbulence coming in this upcoming decade. I know George Friedman's book, The Storm Before the Calm, is all about this kind of unrest, unease, and sort of volatility and sort of a rechange of the whole environment that we've been operating on for probably the last 5 or 6 decades. Peter Zion talking about the change of the order, where global trade was growing every decade and was protected by the U.S. Navy and the military. That's coming apart and changing. So a lot of unrest, a lot of social changes that you're probably going to see going forward, more volatile markets. And a good example is something we addressed 2 or 3 years ago on this show when we talked about Fast and Furious. The nature of the markets today, the structure of the market, is set up for greater volatility. I mean, if you just take a look at, in 3 months, we've gone from the lowest unemployment in 6 decades to the highest unemployment since the Great Depression. We went from record stock markets to probably the fastest decline in the stock market, dropping 38% in 6 weeks. The only other time we dropped that fast was probably 1987, where in 3 days, we lost about 33%. We also see higher inflation. We also see higher taxes coming. That's no secret. Just take a look at the Democratic platform. Joe Biden recently released his plan, should he become president, would be $4 trillion of new tax increases on businesses, tax increases on investments, and higher individual income tax rates, so higher taxation. The other thing that we're seeing is rising medical costs. And you can see this if you've been paying your Medicare premiums. They've gone from roughly about $109 to almost $145 just in the last 3 or 4 years. So retirees are going to be asked to shoulder a larger share of their Medicare cost, whether it's in premiums that you pay on Medicare Part B or in your Medigap insurance. And don't forget, in the new decade under George W. Bush, we went from a single pricing structure on Medicare Part B to now there are 6 tax brackets for Medicare depending on your income. The more income you make, the more that you can pay. Instead of paying $145, you can pay all the way up to $500 a month. So this great macro environment, Chris, is going to change tremendously. It's going to be stagflationary, higher taxes, higher cost of living, more social unrest. Just take a look at, you know, even during the Obama years, we had social unrest. And now, of course, what we're seeing on our evening television sets with the evening news, with the protests that are going across the country as a result of the murder of George Floyd.
So it sounds like you're looking at a more challenging environment ahead for retirees. And of course, they're going to have to respond in certain ways to try to circumvent some of these challenges, whether or not, like you said, it's higher taxes, rising medical costs, and others. What's one of the primary ways that you see retirees currently and in the future adapting or trying to get around some of these issues?
You know, one of the ways that a lot of retirees and boomers prepared for retirement and adapted to retirement was part-time work, or actually delaying retirement because they had to go through 2 bear markets, the bursting of the tech bubble, and then the great financial recession from 2007 and 2009, in 7 years of 0% interest rates. So a lot of retirees or boomers, instead of retiring, or let's say retiring at age 62 or 65, postponed their retirement years, and they also supplemented their retirement income by working part-time in maybe a related field or unrelated field. We think the next big trend is going to be migration. I think you're going to see a lot of people. At one time, Chris, I would say it was about 30% of our retirees in California. Today, it's edging closer to 50% of retirees in California are moving out of the state. They're selling their expensive homes here, and they're moving to other states. Arizona's very popular, Nevada, Texas, Florida is very popular, where the cost of living, I can tell you right now, the difference between San Diego and Las Vegas, the cost of living is about 45% cheaper. And another trend that we have seen recently is retirees that are selling their homes and they're moving into RVs. They're buying used RVs, whether it's a fifth wheeler or an A-class motorhome. And they've decided, look, I don't have the bucks to, you know, go to Europe, go to Asia, Australia, but it is cheaper to travel and live in an RV and live the RV life. We're doing a plan, 2 plans right now. Both couples are selling their house, and they have bought, in both cases, they bought, one bought an A-class motorhome, and the other one bought a fifth wheel, which they plan to travel around the country and live in. Another trend, too, that I see, Chris, they're going to be moving large populous states. Like if you live in New York, New Jersey, maybe you're going to Florida, South Carolina, North Carolina, maybe even Georgia. People in California are moving to, you know, Idaho is one area. Nevada's very popular. Arizona's very popular, where the cost of living is so much cheaper than here. And also because, you know, of the social unrest we're starting to see. And then also, as a result of the social unrest, a lot of the mayors of these big cities where you're seeing these big outbursts are promising to slash and cut their police force. Well, if you're getting a lot of social unrest and violence, the last thing you want to do is actually cut your police force. So maybe not just moving out of large populous states, but moving to less populous states and to smaller towns where the cost of living is much cheaper. You don't have to lock your doors at night. There's less crime. And the pace of living is at a slower pace than the big cities. So RV living, moving to less populous states and smaller towns is a trend we're starting to see. And I'd say the latest trend that has really become popular, which kind of surprised me and got me interested in it, is actually people selling their home and buying an RV.
Yeah, well, again, I mean, as these challenges start to face retirees more and more in the years ahead, because I don't think that these are going to be going away, they're likely to increasing. I mean, higher taxes, that's probably a given, right? Higher medical costs. A lot of these things are, these are forces that are going to be with retirees for some time. So they've got to get creative. And there's a number of ways that you can deal with that. One of those is, like you said, by going to a lower tax state, to living the RV life. This was something, as you said, we have a couple clients that are doing this currently. My parents also grew up here in California. They sold their California home and they moved to a much lower tax state, also lowering their cost of living substantially, paid their house off outright. And they also live in an area where they feel very comfortable. I mean, my dad was sending me pictures just recently of the whole streets, all the businesses around where they live. After the riots started to hit, the streets were lined with the local population with their shotguns out in front of their store, ready to take on anyone that dared to try to break in or loot. So they're now in an area that politically they much more identify with. So this is, I think, like we've discussed, not just an economic trend, it's also a political trend, the shift from blue states to red states or vice versa. But another thing that is also long-term, which all of us are now dealing with, is the dearth of income. The fact that we're back at 0% interest rates, bonds are yielding practically nothing. If you're in Europe, you know, you're talking about negative interest rates. So tell us, how does this impact the retiree for the years ahead?
Well, this was a trend that hit the private sector, Chris, and it began in the 80s as many companies, your Fortune 500 companies, shifted away from defined benefit plans where, you know, mom and dad worked for a company 30 years, you got your Timex watch and you got a pension that probably covered close to 80% of what you were making when you were working. You combined that with Social Security and you were just as well off as when you were working. Well, that shifted to defined contribution plans, commonly referred to today as 401k plans. So the shift and responsibility for retirement was shifted to the individual worker from the company. That will accelerate. And what I predict you're going to see in the next decade is you're going to see this hit the government market. Right now, most government employees, whether you work for state, city, or federal government, you have a defined benefit pension plan. You work so many years and you're going to get a percentage of your salary. You take our own state of California. They have $1 trillion of unfunded pension liabilities. States like New York, New Jersey, Illinois, they're basically going to go bankrupt. And so that they are going to have to make this shift to defined contribution plans. And there's some of the states are already starting to do that. They have a two-tiered system. They have the old tier, which is guaranteed the workers that came up under that system. And they have a newer tier that they're putting in place for new workers going to work for government. So the pension savings is going to be shifted for workers. It's not just going to be the private sector, but it's going to be the government sector because states will be going bankrupt. They simply won't be able to afford it. So that's a trend. The other thing that you're going to see very much, it's going to be a more volatile stock market, and that's going to create unpredictable results for pension funds. Another reason why you're going to see these defined benefit pension plans go away is the assumptions. We'll start with our own state of California. They're assuming a 7.5% return on investments to be able to pay out those benefits to workers. How are you going to do that when you have a 30-year treasury bond at 1.4%? And you have a 10-year treasury note at a little over 0.6%, you're not going to be able to do that. I also think it's going to shift that trend from index and passive investing, where you just put your money in a low-cost index fund and set and forget. That's going away. I mean, just take a look what happened to index investors, whether you were bonds, corporate bonds or you were invested in the major indexes, look what happened to you in just a period of 6 weeks this year. And what's going to happen is because interest rates are going to be kept artificially low, it's going to create more types of things as we talked about, like your parents moving to places, smaller towns that are probably more in alignment politically, philosophically, cheaper to live, lower taxes. I mean, you're going to have to adapt. And just as this trend of part-time work or delaying work until a later age, that's going to accelerate this trend as income rates actually are at zero and in many places. And even some, we had Gary Schilling, and he's talking about interest rates could actually go negative as they are in Europe and in Asia. So what are you going to do? Think of it this way, Chris. If you have $1 million, and let's just kind of put this in perspective. If you had $1 million in 1980, I could have got you $150,000 a year in safe treasuries. If you had $1 million in 1990, I could get you $100,000 in safe treasuries. If you had $1 million in the year 2000, I could have probably got you $70,000, maybe $80,000 if I shifted over to, let's say, corporate. Fast forward to 2010, I could get you $1,500. Fast forward today, on $1 million, if I wanted to put you in 10-year treasuries, you would only get $6,000. So this just goes to show you, as Gary Schilling talked about, the greatest bull market in bonds in a lifetime has been reflected as bond prices have gone up, yields have come down. We've gone from 15.5% on treasuries to a little over 0.5% on treasuries. So this trend could actually go negative, and that's obviously going to change the rates of return that retirees are used to getting. While your expenses of living, whether it's housing, medical, and taxes, are going to go up. There was a gal by the name of Meredith Whitney. She wrote a book, The State of the States, about 10 years ago. And she talked about this demographic shift from the East Coast and the West Coast to inland into the red states in the middle of the country that will be the next emerging market. And you're seeing, Chris, I think as a result of this COVID world, and where we are today with social unrest, 0% interest rates, rising medical cost and housing cost, you're going to see that trend accelerate even more in this post-COVID world.
You were discussing earlier the three different areas where we see most of the expenses come from. One of those, again, was medical. And you have been talking about the difference between in-home care versus nursing homes. How does that fit into the retirement calculation?
Well, let's take a look what was going on with COVID. Some of the largest death rates were a lot of governors forced COVID patients into nursing homes and widespread death. So there's risk of going into these nursing homes. We saw on television a 75-year-old man getting beaten up by a nursing home worker. So there's a lot of all kinds of lawsuits and stories about this, not to mention, Chris, that this is very expensive. I know in my own situation, in the case of my mother, she had dementia and Alzheimer's. And, thank goodness, this was in Arizona where the cost of monthly care was about $6,500 a month. You could probably add another $1,000 or more if that was California. But the last year of her life, she spent living with one of her siblings. And actually, it was much better for her. She was happier. She probably got better treatment. And it was less expensive. It was almost half what it was. And we had in-home nursing care. So I think that is a trend that you're going to see. Retirement homes, I think, Chris, are only going to be the sanctuary for the very wealthy, because only the very wealthy will be able to afford to go into one of these retirement homes. I know here in California, in our city around here, there's two or three homes here that the cost could be for a real small apartment, anywhere from a little over $6,000, all the way, depending on how big the place you have, all the way up to $8,000 or plus. So I think this is a trend that you're going to see. In-home care versus, let's say, nursing home care, and especially after COVID, where we saw the death rate in these nursing homes is a place where a lot of these deaths that were taking place because of comorbidities that a lot of these elder patients had. So that's a trend. Another one that I think you're going to see is new type of retirement homes. You're going to see more single story in retirement communities because you don't want to be going up and down stairs. And one trend that I've seen in two communities, one in Arizona and one I've seen in Vegas, where two-story homes, because land comes for a premium, they're actually putting in elevators, Chris, as an option. So if you don't want to be walking up a set of stairs when you're in your 80s or 90s, you can just simply take the elevator up. So wider hallways, special bathrooms with walk-in tubs, so you don't have to worry about slipping, special electronic monitoring devices that you can put in your home. So if you fall, you trip. I mean, we just think of some of the modern devices we have. For example, if you have an Apple Watch and you trip or you fall, it will alert you. And if you don't respond within 1 minute, 60 seconds, it will call 911. So devices to monitor people that have dementia in case you wander off, heart devices that monitor your heart. I mean, your Apple Watch will do an EKG, monitor AFib. There's devices for that. So a lot of these type of things will be incorporated into home, including home security system with cameras and things like that, that will make you feel more secure. So nursing homes will probably, people will be less reluctant to go into a nursing home or put an elderly parent in one because of the risk of catching a virus, the poor nursing home care, the cost. All of those things are going to weigh in because there just simply won't be the money there to pay for all these kind of things.
You know, Jim, you're talking about some of the new technology that can be implemented to help people that are in nursing homes or staying at home getting in-home care. One of the things that I think is going to be implemented probably not too long from now is basically in-home surveillance, where you would have a camera that's installed in every room and it can automatically track your movement throughout the house. And then obviously if you have Alexa or any other Google Home type devices, those can also pick up on your sound. So they can monitor you while you're going about your house. If you stop and you're in one location for too long, it can detect, did you trip? Or are you just resting? Are you breathing? Because obviously it can pick up on sound. So this is another level of, we could call it surveillance, but in this case now for monitoring the elderly to make sure that they're healthy and not in trouble. And obviously, like you said, there's increasing awareness that people working in nursing homes or providing in-home care may not be trustworthy. So that also provides another incentive either to mitigate the risk of mistreatment or to provide evidence just in case that were to take place.
Yeah, one of the trends that, as you're mentioning, you're going to see is in-home nursing care. I mean, that's what we did with my mother the last year of her life, a nurse that came in. Also monitoring, in my mother's case, you know, an Apple Watch that can monitor tripping, falling, monitor heart rate in her case, which was very important. And also because of dementia, if she walked out of the house and, you know, there was one day where she basically walked out of the house and walked down the street, well, we could find where she was. And so those kind of things, in-home monitoring devices, as you mentioned, whether it's Alexa, a watch or some other kind of thing that can not only monitor where an elderly parent might be, but also monitor their health conditions. And those things are going to be features that are going to be with electronics that are going to be built into future homes. As I mentioned already, one of the trends that we're seeing in Vegas, we're seeing it in Arizona, where land is now at a premium, where you're seeing, even for the elderly, two-story homes, but two-story homes with elevators. So you don't have to go up a flight of stairs. So this is also going to change retirement homes and what they look like.
Well, I remember back in the day, I believe it was my great aunt. She had the, forget what it was called, but it was basically a chair that ran up your stairwell, right? So you'd sit on the chair and it would automatically move you up. I haven't seen those. It seems like they don't make those anymore. So I don't know whatever happened to them, if they just decided elevators are safer. But yeah, I always loved that when I was a kid, riding up the stairs on that chair. Well, Jim, let's talk about where obviously our company, Financial Sense Wealth Management, and some of the planning services that we provide fits into this, and just the importance of having a plan to prepare for some of these issues and how we can assist anyone who's either near retirement or in retirement with some of these long-term challenges that we discussed today.
Yeah, there's so many issues that you have to look at in planning. I mean, whether the state you're going to be domiciled. We had recently, we were working on a financial plan for one couple that wanted to move to a particular state, and we had to point out to them that even though they may not face federal estate taxes, one of the states they were looking at moving to had a state estate tax that began on $2 million of assets and would go as high as 20%. So that ruled that out. We're working with a lot of clients now. We have a program that we use. We can take where you live, and assuming it's a major city, I mean, if it's a town of 5,000, we don't have data on that, but we can actually plug in where you're thinking of going, which state, and we can tell you the difference in your cost of living, which takes into cost shelter, taxes, food, gasoline, all those kind of things. And so we're assisting people and we're thinking differently, you know, perhaps postponing taking Social Security to age 70. So it grows by 32%, which leaves the surviving spouse. In many cases, it's the wife with more income should the husband predecease her. Social Security, Medicare options, taxes, we've developed a special income program that pays probably two or three times what you could earn in treasuries. It's tax efficient. It's taxed at a lower rate. That was developed as a result of requests and needs of retired clients. We're plugging into our programs what part-time work would do, what delaying retirement will do, which states are best for estate taxes, income taxes, cost of living, and all of this. And it's just like anything else, Chris, when you have a plan and you look at all these things, and then we're also working in contingencies. We're working in plan B. What happens to a spouse? Let's say there's a husband and wife living together, and all of a sudden one spouse becomes ill, has to go into retirement home. So we're looking at, you know, things like what would in-home nursing cost, or homes that would have special features. Those are all the kind of things that we are now dealing with. And it's not just that, Chris. It's also the complexity of estate plans. Most people aren't aware. We have 50 states. 10 states are community property, which have different survivorship options and distribution options than the other 40 states that are common law states, which have a whole different set of economic considerations and estate planning considerations. And people don't think about that. They think, okay, I grew up in a common law state and all of a sudden I moved to a community property state. They don't realize they better change their estate plan, or vice versa. They're in a community property state and all of a sudden they move to a common law state. Or they may move to a state that has estate taxes and they're completely unaware of it. So there's a lot of things that go into planning that we didn't have to deal with 20 and 30 years ago that we are now having to deal. We have to think outside the box. We have to get creative. But the good news is there's a lot more solutions today than available. Like I said, one of the biggest trends that we've seen with our clients, not only just moving out of expensive states, but clients that are selling their home. We have one couple that part of their plan is we're looking at the option of going to a state where, because of the heat, we're talking about Arizona, it would be sort of unbearable living there during the summer months when the temperatures can get up to like 112, 113, heck, 115. I grew up in Arizona, so I'm well aware of the temperatures, but they're thinking of actually getting a large motorhome as an option, and traveling. And so instead of buying a home, they're talking about getting a used 40 to 45 foot RV and doing a lot of their traveling because it's less expensive. So you have to think outside the box, Chris, and more importantly, you better have a plan.
So with that said, Jim, if any of our listeners want to speak with you or any of our advisors about some of the topics that we discuss in today's podcast, what would be the best way to do so?
Easiest way is call 888-486-3939. That's 888-486-3939. And one of our certified financial planners or certified tax and estate planners can help you work a plan. And I might want to point out, Chris, people think that, I don't have to think about this until I'm a couple years away from retirement. That's not necessarily true. There are certain ages that you need to be aware of and start planning. One is age 50, one is age 55, another one is age 59 and a half, age 60, 62, 66, and age 72. Those are key retirement dates that different laws, different things kick in that will impact your retirement. So it's not just when you turn age 65 or 66 or age 60. It starts at age 50.
Well, once again, give us a call at 888-486-3939.
In the meantime, on behalf of Chris Sheridan and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us in on this special report, Retirement After COVID. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant and safe week.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.